Welcome back to another series of the Make Life Work podcast, season 6, if you're counting. I am your host, Cy Jobling, side project addict with far too many years to count from working in tech. I'm also a software engineering manager, community advocate, and podcast junkie, so this is the ideal platform for me to share topics important to me. This time on the podcast, I've returned to interview more people from around the tech scene about some of their recent projects, how they fit them around lockdown life, along with their day jobs. By diving into their specific projects, we hope to uncover some of the tips and tricks they use to make them happen, so you lovely listeners can try them out yourself. This week, I've invited along MT McCann, human-centered product designer at ESO, a software multinational based in Texas and now Belfast, which creates software for health and safety professionals that threads the moment a patient dials 911 until they leave hospital aftercare. MT is also co-organiser of Belfast meetup Ladies at UX. Following a tricky year of arranging physical meetups, I thought it would be insightful to dive into her side project, along with how she managed to balance it with her family and day job. This is Making Ladies at UX with MT McCann. So welcome along, MT, as you'd like to be called, I think.
Yeah, it's short for Marie Therese. So my parents gave me such a long-winded name when I was younger, but MT works in the working world and the sporting world a lot easier, so MT's good.
Nice initials. Sporting world, we could touch on later as well. It's quite a popular area to have just initials, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and a bit of intrigue as well. You know, I think people always think, MT, what's that all about?
A bit of mystique. And in fact, just for the listeners' benefit, I didn't even really know your name before we started hooking up on this. I do embarrassingly ask you. So educational for anyone that's listening. You're like, now you know what a real name is.
Very good.
All good. So welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. Obviously, it's all about work, life and any side projects. Before we get into all that, do you want to tell the listeners what it is you do, how you got there and a little bit of a snapshot history, I guess?
Yeah, no problem. As I say, my name is Marie Therese. Surname's McCann. I'm a lead product designer in ESO in Belfast here in Northern Ireland. And a bit of background, I suppose, born and raised here in Northern Ireland, in and around the North Shore of Loch Ness. So if you look at the map of Ireland and you see the north of Ireland, there's a lake right in the middle of it. And I was just born north of it. So child of the 80s, you know, in a time when Northern Ireland wasn't really in the best place it could be. And I guess I, along with my family and friends, really benefited hugely from the progression of peace and everything that came with that in the 90s, you know, the start of the ceasefires and the beginning and eventual signing of the Good Friday Agreement in 98. So that really is a marker for my teenage years. And I think it's important, and I just made a note of that I wanted to chat about it, because it's my teenage years that I first began my love of digital. And that's really whenever the internet came into the commercial world, and we all started to understand maybe, you know, what is this? This is going to be a big thing for the future. So it was like the mid to late 90s during those teenage years. And just started to open up a world of possibilities and global connections. And it was really exciting and at the same time didn't fully understand it at all, you know. And at home we got our first computer, and I think I was about 13 or 14, and we had 2 Encarta CDs with it. So there was no internet connection, you know, at that stage. But mixing that and that love of the computer at home and, you know, just what that could bring. I also loved art and painting at school and playing sport as well, that we just mentioned. So, you know, I got to travel quite a bit across Ireland playing camogie, which is an Irish sport here in Ireland. And I played for my school and for my county. So did a lot of traveling, did a lot of meeting new people. And as well, around that time, I was also a lover of the PlayStation, so that took me away from practicing my sport too. So trying to get that balance right. So, but that was a big passion as well. So that coupled with the introduction of the internet and general just society changes in Northern Ireland, it was great. you could see that, you know, the passion for the opportunities for digital in this region was starting to become something that I could focus on and aspire towards post, you know, A-level life, I guess. And as well, in the mix of that, I was also interested in psychology, a bit of that too, and I considered that maybe for a degree as well. And I was just really interested in how the mind works and how we make decisions. So I went on to study, in the end, interactive multimedia at University of Ulster in Jordanstown. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the early digital degrees at the time. And I was hooked from there. So at that point, mobile phones were really only starting to increase in their functionality as well. And coloured mini iPods were on the market. I'm showing my age at this stage.
I'm feeling you now. This is exactly the same period.
Yeah.
We had all those funky Apple Macs with the coloured backgrounds around our university as well.
Yeah, definitely. And it was just all so exciting, this new world of technology and what that could mean for your career and our future and for everybody. You know, the degree started opening up the opportunities and the awareness that we could solve problems for people in society by designing things in a digital medium. And it just really blew my mind. So I completed a year then in Intel in Dublin as part of that degree. And that was a great experience as well. We were creating interactive educational content for PDAs, again, showing my age. I don't even know what a PDA is. But it ran Flash Lite at the time. So we were able to create characters that describe different educational content, like for science and for maths and for English, and build out timelines and add audio on top of that, and transcripts as well. And, you know, which was really innovative at the time. It was a super experience. So whenever I came back for my final year in my course then, my focus was on building something in a mobile format, which, you know, my course directors at the time, they were all, you know, they weren't considering that medium even. You know, this is before the iPhone, so we didn't have this in a commercial sense, just as in society really. PDAs weren't something everybody had, so I started making my project around a digital house brochure for estate agents to be able to list their houses in an interactive form. Somebody could take it in a mobile phone. It was a Nokia phone that ran Flash Lite at the time. And you could walk around a house and view it and get all the details on your phone. So that was my my university experience, and then Intel just really helped me see the possibilities that could go from there. So yeah, post-education then had a few different roles in web design and front-end development as well for a few years. But then I kind of hit a plateau at a stage that customers were driving the design process, and they were like, you know, we want our logo bigger, can you move this here? Can you put this copy in this position? And I came to that point where I knew there had to be a better way to design rather than subjective opinion dictating the, you know, the flow of whatever the medium was. So I started looking for UX roles then at that point. And yeah, so moved into the world of UX then, and that was probably about 8 or 9 years ago, and had various different roles in UX in software houses and a creative agency. And then my last position before the one I'm currently in, I was in a UX agency for nearly 6 years, running a UX team in there, which was great.
Blimey. And so how long have you been in the current role now?
Yeah, I just joined ESO during the pandemic, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, moved there last September. So time has flew, and it's been great. It's been a great experience.
How did you, I mean, this is probably a bit of a tangent, but how did you find that shift from in jobs in the pandemic as well? Because obviously, normally we'd have a big ceremony about leaving and starting a place. You get all the onboarding in person. You've had to do this all remotely, I imagine.
Yeah. It was a very different experience. You know, you went from working in one place on a Friday to working in a totally different environment virtually on the Monday, but in the same place. So you know, we didn't physically move anywhere. But yeah, the company ESO is headquartered in the States, and they have various offices across North America. And they had created our office in Belfast in 2019. So, you know, they've got used to the remote nature of between all the different offices anyway, and getting everybody set up from in that nature. But yeah, it was a different experience for sure. But they had it well prepared in advance. They had set up quite a few opening onboarding meetings with different colleagues across the organization in the first couple of weeks. So just getting to know people, saying hello, having a coffee, and lots of really warm welcomes, which I appreciated a lot. So they put a lot of time and effort into thinking how they could make that virtual experience special, because it is daunting for sure. And especially for me, I'd left a really great team, you know, a team of people that I loved working with. And I was sad to leave them, but the time was right career-wise to move from an agency environment to a product team for me personally. So it was hard leaving the guys behind and saying goodbye virtually as well. And you know, we had some virtual games and catch-ups online, and so yeah, it was difficult, but it was a good experience, you know, that ESO had cultivated for its staff, which was great.
That's nice. And I guess with your sort of UX mindset, you are thinking about the experience from your own personal perspective, but then how can you improve things, I guess, as well?
Yeah.
So has there been any little pieces where you go, well, actually,
yeah,
why don't you try this as well?
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, I fed a few things back to our hiring team here in Belfast that, you know, I thought would help future employees too. But, you know, they had lots of stuff covered. It was great.
Just small nuances, I guess, rather than massive issues. Yeah, yeah. So I've recently changed job in lockdown as well. And it's been very strange, but you know, it's for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And I've observed, because I've got a new guy starting next week. I'm meant to be line managing. I will be line managing. And I'm thinking, how do I make this really inclusive for him? Mm-hmm. Rather than it just being, welcome, join the video call. And that's it. You know, that's not the best experience from what I've gone through. But I have tried to pick up how everyone else is feeding back from their own experiences as well. And it's a mind game just to try and get this to work well. So, congratulations to ESO for making it feel seamless for you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think we had a little bit of an advantage in that they only had, you know, moved to Belfast in 2019. So there had only been a few staff brought in and met virtually before the pandemic hit. So quite a few people had joined during the pandemic. So I didn't feel like, you know, I had a lot of people I could share, you know, the experience with as well. So we were fortunate in that way too.
That's cool. That's nice. We talked a lot about your career to date then. And then actually, well, the reason I invited you along was to talk about your side project, really, the Ladies at UX. Could you tell us a little bit about what motivated that meetup and, you know, what problems were you trying to solve by doing that?
So I guess, yeah, the point that I was running through earlier about just getting to that plateau of there has to be a better way to design. When I got to that stage in one of my previous web design roles before I moved into the full UX role, when I joined that very first UX role, it was in a software house, and it was mainly a big team of engineers. It was male dominated. There was only a handful of women as well. I was the only UX person there. And even though I had moved jobs, knowing that UX was the direction I wanted to move in the career, it wasn't something that, you know, I'd learned at university. It was something that I was building my experience on just at home and reading in my personal time and trying to upskill as well. So there was no set process, you know, to pick up from whenever I joined that software house. There was no real desire for UX either. It was mainly, you know, a bit of a box ticking exercise, if I'd be truthful, you know, to win contracts. So this is a few years ago now. And, you know, the engineers were, you know, waiting for designs, you know, at all times. They didn't understand what UX was. So I felt very isolated in that environment, and like a fish out of water, you know, having came from the previous role. So I started doing some research to see, was there any meetups out there that I could join and learn from other people? And in Belfast at the time, there wasn't. Now, there was a UX book club had been set up, but it had just a slightly different focus. And but I stumbled across Ladies at UX, and it hadn't begun that long. So this was back in 2014. And the two ladies that created Ladies at UX were from Manchester, and got in touch with them, had a couple of phone calls, and they had already set up in a few different cities as well across Europe. So they were, you know, they were buzzing to get another city on board. And, you know, initially I was just reaching out to hear more, to see if maybe somebody else had started it already in Belfast. But then I naturally then became the leader. So it wasn't my focus to set out to do that and run a meetup, but that's what it became in the end. But the women, the ladies were so welcoming, which is they embodied the focus of the group, you know, the passion for bringing women together to share their experiences, giving them an environment that they feel safe and empowered to talk about their challenges and perhaps the different environments they're in and, you know, things that have come up and how they've got over those, and also giving them, you know, a format to participate and build on their own skills as well, perhaps by running presentations or running workshops in this Ladies at UX environment and learning from each other. So, they talked me through the ethos. It all aligned with what I wanted from a meetup, and that's how I was motivated to get going with it, and how I ended up falling into the leadership role.
Wow, I mean, it's lovely that you've got a personal problem you're trying to solve. You didn't kind of go, well, we could do with a meetup. It's more like, I'm really frustrated that I've got no one to share my stories and my thoughts with. Is there anything nearby?
Yeah.
Oh, you're in Manchester. What are you doing? And is there anything like that? But then they went, oh, if you want to do it, carry on. And the fact that you were then go, oh, okay, that's on me now, I guess. Yeah. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, frightened, to be honest, because public speaking isn't something that comes naturally to me. And it's not, you know, I consider myself a bit of an introvert, a bit of both sometimes.
Not many in tech, though, really, aren't we?
Yeah. It depends what the situation is. But it wasn't something that I knew I was terribly skilled at, but at the same time needed to develop to improve myself as a UX designer and to be able to influence teams and share research. You know, I needed to get better at communicating and holding presentations and bringing people together and, you know, all of that good stuff that being a leader helps you get experience in anyway. So it was pushing myself out of my comfort zone, to be honest, but I kind of just rolled up my sleeves and just went with it. It's kind of been my approach to life, to be honest. Whenever I hit something that feels a bit scary, you know, you have to make a decision, and if you go for it, you just throw yourself in, and that's the route I took with it.
It's quite intimidating, I guess. So we were talking before the podcast, you know, how do you feel about doing this? And you feel like you're, what can I actually bring? But actually, everyone's got their own story. And the fact that you've created that platform now for other people around you to do that, you must feel like the satisfaction and the joy is really made it work.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when we started it back in 2014, the very first meetup had 12 people at it, which was great. And, for, you know, especially because of the, you know, the mindset I was in, I was nervous. I was, you know, is this something I want to do? Will people turn up? And it was great. It was a nice small group of girls who were in the exact same boat as me, just wanting to get together and talk about the different challenges and situations they were in. And I just felt really empowered by that, and then felt a sense of responsibility to keep it going, you know, as well, which did motivate me too. So yeah, it's been brilliant. So the last in-person meetup we had at the end of 2019, we held in a company called Allstate here in Belfast. And we had over 70 in attendance at that
meeting. Wow.
Yeah, so it has really grown. And we had 10 speakers that evening as well. And there was a real breadth of experience across the speakers too. So, you know, I did feel a real sense of pride that night, because I could see girls in the audience that were me 6-7 years ago, you know, not long out of university, and really needing to find something or a group of people that they could, you know, learn from. So that was great.
So that's a 5-year timeline, really, isn't it? From inception with 12 of you to 70 of you in 2019. That's amazing growth. And did you find like it was kind of a slow trajectory, or was it kind of everyone joined straight away and it just continued to be like that? How did it work for you?
Yeah, it was a bit of a slow trajectory, I guess. But then as well, we took a bit of a break for about 2 years in between, because one of my leaders alongside me had to move to Australia, I think it was, for a year. So there was just a lot of workload, so we paused it at the time, and then we got it going again after that. So yeah, we've built it up, but it's definitely started to skyrocket in the last couple of years, because Belfast as a city and a region here in Northern Ireland is really starting to grow in regards to its technical capabilities and its as a place for companies to set up here. So, you know, the roles are there's tons of roles there for UX now as well, and our graduates coming out of the degrees have jobs before they get the results, you know, near enough as well. So, you know, it's the region is just starting to grow exponentially now. So I can only see the numbers start to grow, especially as we get back into in-person events too, which I'm looking forward to.
It's a great example of how you can build a community in a not a niche, but it's a specialist topic, right? You know, but at least the university is churning out people in that market like yourself from how many years ago. But like me, I was like, well, yeah, I came out of university, didn't have anywhere to go, set up a little community in Birmingham, and you know, we had a handful to start with. It grew to, I don't know, probably about 30, maybe 40 at its peak, so it wasn't as big as at UX, but it was lovely to have that community around us just to share the same problems, maybe not same problems as you guys went through, but to kind of go, I've got no other geeks around me to bounce ideas off, please join me in the pub and we'll have a good laugh about it.
Yeah,
and it was great to do that. And I feel like we can talk about lockdown in a moment, but at least we had that environment to do it. It sounds like you guys in Belfast, with a hub growing, it can only get bigger and might get a bit too big. I'm wondering is there a peak for the group, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah, there's many factors there, I guess. I suppose when we started off small at the start, you know, we could meet in a local bar, a local cafe, and then we had to start thinking about bigger venues, and you know, we're providing food and refreshments, and you know, who's going to pay for these things as well. And so over the last year, since we have started, or year and a half now, I guess, with the pandemic, we've started to think about that better, and we've brought a sponsor on board who will be announcing now in the next couple of months, all being well. So that gives us you know, some money in the bank then as well to just keep promoting it and help us make the experience during the event just one, you know, just make it a lot nicer for everybody as well. So ESO in particular, I've been thinking about our office development and design in regards to Ladies at UX as well. Not that we'll hold all of our future meetings there, but we have a great space and a big bleachers area that, you know, can hold upwards of 100 people. So so that's where I'll be hoping to channel quite a few of the events whenever we get back into in-person, which will be super.
That'd be wonderful. And now you've got an area to do that. But you know, that your employees support as well, which is fantastic, right?
Yeah.
If you need help with your side project, either for inspiration, support, or just general feedback, remember to join our On The Side community on Slack. There are a number of previous guests from the podcast in there, including Sam Hardacre, Mike Street, Dom Hodgson, and Mark Lismore. Pop on over to ontheside.network, which will take you straight through to registration, and I'll see you in there. I just want to touch a little bit on what kind of topics do you generally go through at the Ladies at UX? Is it a bit about diversity? Is it a bit about, you know, tech? Is it a good mix? What sort of stuff do you cover?
Bit of a mix. So some of the topics last year pandemic related to begin with, and we had various different people from different organisations within UX coming in and giving us a talk on how the pandemic had affected them and their role, perhaps how their processes needed to change to be able to reach users and do research and run usability tests when remote in a virtual environment. And how that maybe differed between the small organization and a larger enterprise organization. So that was good, and that was quite specific. Other topics we've had, we had a great talk last year about sustainability in digital, and Jerry McGovern is a big proponent for sharing the knowledge of how digital does still impact the environment. And because there's this preconception that, you know, because it's digital and it's online, that it's free and it's cleaner, essentially. He wrote a book about it lately called Worldwide Waste. And yeah, it's frightening, just some of the numbers on, you know, how much we're contributing, you know, how much carbon we're contributing into the environment with, you know, wastage in digital, just continually building stuff and wasting. And maybe, you know, instead of renewing and making things more sustainable, we're building new all the time on top of it. You know, we're using a lot of video at the moment, obviously, during the pandemic. And what does that mean as well? So we had a big theme around that in one of our topics, which was great. There's a great conversation around that, too. And I know from my experience, that is not something that is a topic in our jobs, about how much wastage there is in the environment, the effect on the environment is not something that's discussed. So we also had a lady on from a local design agency who had a big part to play in the design of the Northern Ireland COVID app last year. All right. As well, Rachel Walsh and or Rebecca Walsh, sorry, and she took us through the design of that and how they user tested that during the peak of lockdown one. And yeah, that was really interesting and inspiring. You know, it's a Belfast team doing brilliant work that was affecting us all, so that was great too. So yeah, previous talks, accessibility is another topic that I like to always try and get onto the agenda when I can. Again, it is not at the forefront of a lot of, not all teams' minds. I don't like to generalize, but not enough teams' minds about how accessible our digital products that we're building are, and how important it is to be inclusive, and when that's built into the process, and how we're testing for it, and all of that good stuff. So that's a bit of a snapshot of some of the topics anyway.
Plenty though, by the sound of it. Just complete massive, you know, rainbow of different ideas to cover. You've talked a lot about lockdown actually. How has that affected the meetup, and what sort of challenges have you seen by going through the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, from a personal point of view, well, obviously the pandemic has affected us all and all of us globally. And at the moment, ladies at UX in Belfast, we had three leaders last year. And, you know, I guess whenever lockdown one hit, you know, there was the anxiety of what did it mean for us all? Where were we all going to end up? You know, the ladies at UX wasn't at the top of the priority list, you know, at that stage, until we all got settled and found our feet in that new normal, you know, come probably April 2020 last year, when it started, you know, we started feeling, right, this is us for another wee while. What are we going to do? How do we make the meetup work? So we held three remote sessions last year using Zoom, and yeah, the numbers did definitely drop from the in-person events, but we still had a good healthy number of between 20 and 25 joining our few events that we did get running last year. And you know, there was lots of chat in the room and various different circumstances as well. A lot of people were a lot more busy than they had been, finding themselves working a lot harder, you know, with lockdown, because their work environment was now in their home environment. But then there was a lot of surprise, and there was a few people as well that had been on furlough. And I guess, you know, I use the word surprising only because when you're very busy yourself in technology, you think everybody is. But there was some teams that were put on furlough too. And, you know, the anxiety of where did that leave some of those people, and what should they start doing, or do they need to start looking elsewhere? And so we had a lot of conversations around that too. And again, it was just, it reminded you of the importance of the meetup, just to have that environment that you could just candidly talk about things and get a second, perspective on the situation. And, you know, it was really comforting to have that group and community to lean on, even though we only got three events held. You know, it was still very useful.
I'm sure. And obviously you've got a bit of history as well, like, you know, well, 5 or 6 years really at this point. You've kind of got to know each other quite a lot. You've probably got a support network behind the meetups where you probably chat.
Yeah.
And to have that opportunity just to go, next Thursday, we're all having a catch up. We're going to bring some topics to the table, but bring what you want, you know, just have a good rant if we have to.
Yeah, exactly. And we're always getting new faces as well, but there is a core set of about 10 people that are always there at every event, so you're right. And it's brilliant then for, you know, people maybe younger or earlier in their career, people just to come in and be able to sit back and just listen and, you know, take in the conversations of maybe the rest of the folk that have been there, you know, been knocking around for a couple of years, and they can just sort of find their feet and see how they fit in with the group as well. So
it's good. It's very hard to create that community, but at least you've got a close-knit group of 10 maybe, and then the rest can just work around it.
Yeah,
love it. What are the plans, do you think, for the ladies at UX? What do you think is going to come up over the next year or so?
Yeah, well, we have two new leaders coming on board now next month.
Okay.
So two previous leaders are just coming to the end of their stint now, and they're moving on. So we'll be announcing that change now over the next month. And the two new leaders coming on board, are bringing two different angles as well to the group, and real in-depth expertise as well in their own areas. So we'll be adding more topics around service design with one of the leaders' experience coming into the group, and user research as well. So albeit user research is embedded within the UX process, one of our leaders is a UX researcher with a wealth of experience across the board in different industries. So she'll be bringing, you know, a lot more direction there and ideas and everything that we can start to build on in future topics. So really, really interested in that and seeing where that takes us now, going into the second half of this year. We'll be getting our sponsor announced as well, hopefully middle of the summer. And all being well, we might be able to get an in-person meetup in the last quarter of the year. We'll see how that pans out. So keep building on what we're doing. Hopefully as well, we have discussed getting a focus, starting to build more of a focus on encouraging more younger girls into technology. So, you know, figuring out, and we'll bring this to one of our sessions as well to get the whole community's ideas on it. How can we reach girls in their teenage years, that maybe didn't get the bright lights that I did with the advent of the internet and the possibilities it brought? But how do we get a hold of them early to show them, you know, this is a career that could be brilliant for you? It's not geeky that, like, it's made out to be in the media and puts a lot of girls off. And I can say that with experience, because I have this conversation with my own teenager who thinks it's about sitting at a computer all day, and, you know, it's the last thing she wants to do. And yeah, how do we reach that age group before they start doing their doing their exams and setting a path for themselves, that maybe technology and digital digital design is a part of that going forward?
I'd love to know the outcome of that session, because it's something that I'm really keen to address. You know, as a line manager, I'm struggling to find any diversity in the candidates.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're missing something early on, like you say, in early education, when it's a prime time to capture that interest and then channel it. Right. My wife's a teacher as well, so she's on this. She's like, why don't there know any women in your job? Well, because you're not really nurturing the talent at your stage. And that's what I feel the problem is really coming down to.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've got plenty of good plans coming up anyway. And watch this space, sounds like, as well.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have any answers just at this moment in time, but perhaps, you know, being able to cultivate the people in our community to reach out to local schools and networks that, you know, we can meet young girls at that stage in school and tell them a bit about our career and what it brings to us, not only as a job for life, but, you know, how it adds to your life outside of work as well. How that makes life work together. You know, I think it's an absolutely fantastic career working in technology. I know I am biased, but, you know, I think this career really benefits me as a mother and a family person. You know, I love nothing more than being able to shut off in the evenings and spend time with my family and do all of that stuff, make it all work together. And equally, I love being completely plugged into work and being able to give my best to the users of our software. So it really works for me as a working mother. And I just feel that's missing, you know, that isn't being dispersed down to younger kids, whereas they might think a career in in a hospital environment and maybe a nursing role or in legal or in teaching, or which are all fantastic careers as well, but sometimes I feel they're the only careers that they think of that might work with a work-life balance as well as, you know, and don't consider a technology one in the same light, really, is what I mean.
It has a stigma attached to it, mm-hmm. I think we actually see it a lot of the time where engineers will work stupid hours. They generally are night owls rather than early birds. And they don't know when to turn off. It's just like, well, hang on. But then actually we can go to this now. As a mummy, and your Twitter name alludes to this, you're quite a busy mummy with a family to look after. How do you fit time and structure your day to make sure that you're not absorbing yourself completely into work, but and then allowing yourself a bit of time to do all the fun stuff like Ladies at UX?
Yeah, it takes a lot of organization, I guess. And as any mother will know, just running a busy household with your kids, you know, you have to be planning well in advance, and there has to be a lot of communication with various bodies, whether it's the school, whether it's your kids' coaches, or whether, you know, it's getting them to some other event on time. You know, you have to have your calendar up to date at all times. So just being on top of everything is imperative. So any mommy has to do that, and you have to make sure that you're making your life, your working life, blend in there too. But I guess for me, you know, I went through various different positions since I graduated. And a lot of them were in an agency environment, the majority of them were actually, and that was fantastic. They were, you know, they were great at the time. They gave me all the experience that I needed at that stage of my career, you know, working between different industries. One week you might have been working in the hospitality sector, the next maybe in an educational problem to solve, the next one maybe banking, the next one telecom. So you were constantly learning, constantly adapting to a new environment, new people, new processes, new things to learn. And it was great. And it was great at the time. But with that comes an awful lot of mental energy required to be able to jump from one to the other. And I just got to that stage of my career where, you know, I just couldn't do it anymore. And, you know, the pandemic really hit the nail on the head for me last March. When we all moved our working environments to home, everybody was the same. But, you know, I started to I was spending more time with everybody at home during the working day. And albeit it was still a struggle doing homeschooling as well on top of the working day's work, you know, I was getting to see that my girls more. When they got back to school, I was able to drop them to school and collect them at home time while still making the working day work. And in amongst that, I was still in the agency environment. So I was loving all the time I was spending with my family, but the mental energy strain was quite a lot. So that's why I made the decision at the time that, you know, I wanted to put my focus into one industry and really be able to hone in on that instead of jumping back and forth and apply all the UX experience that I had got and richly learned from agency environment, absolutely loved it at the time, but bring that all to the product environment and build from there. And that switch has been hugely beneficial to me and to my family as well, and my partner too, who is also another big rock and making it all work as well, I must say. He definitely needs a big shout out, you know, at times when the child needs lifted, you know, he's always there, and having somebody in support is massive when you're trying to make it all work. But yeah, being on top of your schedule, for me, moving into the product role really, really helped me be able to manage it a lot better over this last 7 or 8 months.
That's cool. Maybe the career change would just give you a new perspective on how to handle that stuff as well. It's a fresh start, isn't it?
Yeah.
And especially during pandemic, you can go, well, actually, now I know what I need to do at home. Now I've got my girls and life and all the other bits that we need to do. I'm glad you've got it. I'm a big advocate of calendar organization and one source of calendar, not a work one and a personal one. Just put the two together, because that's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
It's exactly. And I think that's a discipline that a lot of people don't really have at the moment, but it's just really helps. So that's great. I'm glad you're getting there. You've mentioned a few times the sports that you're into as well. Do you play or do you watch? What's the deal? How do you find the time for that as well?
Yeah, well, I played a lot until I was in my early 30s, and then just work and life and hitting that level in your career where, you know, all the young kids are coming in and it's just a bit harder to play at that top level. So I stepped back at that stage and started coaching. Coaching the young girls. So our sport at home here in Northern Ireland for us is camogie, and there's a male version of it called hurling. I'm not sure if you've seen any of it on TV.
I've heard of this stuff, no.
It was picked up by Sky a couple of years ago. Sky came on board, a big sponsor in the GAA. So camogie, hurling, and Gaelic football and ladies football are all sports under the umbrella of the GAA. And the GAA is an Irish national sport. And it's played all throughout Ireland, and you can play at a club level, which is your local community area. So where you are born is where you play for the rest of your life.
Nice.
So unless you move home and you want to play for another club, you can do that. But largely you play for the one club all your life. So the friends that you make when you start playing, when you're 4 and 5, you're still playing with them as a senior at 33, 34, you know, and there's That's real
fantastic. Yeah.
Your real camaraderie built up, you know, you can imagine. And the benefits of that to the community is massive as well. Like, you know, their elderly neighbours have seen you maybe come through all the ranks all throughout their years, and they're supporting you at senior level. And it really means something to the community then when you win or you get to a final. And yeah, it's a brilliant community initiative, and it's an amateur sport. So you give up your free time to coach and help as well. So that's the stage of my career, sporting career I'm in. I'm coaching.
All coach now.
Yeah, all coaching now. That's a different challenge in itself. It's taught me an awful lot, and I've an awful lot still to learn as well. You know, there's so many crossovers in work and life and coaching a team as well, mm-hmm. trying to develop that team into a high performing team. And we all know how hard that is to do, and, you know, how easy you can get it wrong as well in a working environment, and what that means and how it translates into sport too, and the similarities. It's really interesting, and I haven't got 100% right yet, but I find that crossover a great challenge, you know.
That's nice. And so you're learning from each area of your life, really, to apply it to others and swap it around a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, in different roles gone past, whenever I've seen traits in people that played sports and how they adapt to a team environment better in a working context, you know, you'll make mistakes. There's things to learn. There's people in your team to rely on. And it's the people that played sports that I've noticed anyway, that can adapt to that a bit quicker than others. They've built up that resilience through sport. And then conversely, in the sporting side, because I'm working with underage kids and they're learning all of those things still at the moment, I'm trying to get ahead and teach them that it's okay to make mistakes. You know, you're in a team, you don't have to do it all. Rely on each other. You can be creative. Don't hold yourself back for fear of making mistakes. If you make mistakes, that's how you learn, you know. And there's definitely crossover there, and it's just really interesting doing the both.
That's cool. Love it. We're nearly out of time, actually. I just realized how long we've been going on now. Have you got any final tips for the listeners on how they can maybe set up their own meetup and maybe where to start?
Yeah, so I think for sure finding at least two other leaders with similar passions to yourself to get them on board. What I found leaders past and our ladies at UX in Belfast would also agree, because we've talked about it at length, that you know, we're all doing this in our own time, and sometimes, you know, life just gets in the way, and you want to be able to rely on each other and pull each other out whenever maybe you can't make something at the last minute. So building that network of leaders that you can all of you can rely on is really important. So doing that first, and just starting small as well. We began with creating our Twitter account and just starting the conversation on Twitter. Letting the community know and retweeting, you know, our early tweets to say, we're thinking of creating this community. Would you like to join? What would you like us to talk about? What do you think is good to consider, etc.? And just starting in that very small manner and seeing how many people join and what the conversation is like. And then, you know, create that new meetup, just get it out there in a cafe, and, you know, start small and build from there like we did, and see where it takes you. You know, don't put too much pressure on yourself either, and enjoy it too as well, because, you know, I like I said earlier, I was nervous, but after the very first event, and I met people that were exactly the same stage in their career as me, and when I seen 5 years later how we had grown the numbers, and I could see myself in the audience 5 years before, you know, it was immense amount of pride in taking that on board and providing that environment for people. So, you know, step out of your comfort zone. If it feels like a challenge, if it feels scary, it's probably the right thing to do, you know, to take that leap, and make sure you have a couple of good people on board with you just to give you that added extra comfort. So
I mean, there's more than one tip there. There's quite a few, but it kind of nicely summarizes: get some friends to help you with it, enjoy it, and relish in what you do as well. Make sure you said don't do it for the wrong reasons. Good stuff, MT. I'm loving this conversation. We might need to revisit at some point in the future to see how things have evolved as well.
And yeah.
Especially with ladies at UX, but with your career as well, because there's a lot of crossover by the sound of it. How can people get hold of you individually if they want to reach out and have a chat?
Yeah, certainly. Twitter is always the best medium. I love Twitter. It's great. So you can get me there on Busy Mummy. So that's BUSYMUMY.
Yep, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, you can reach me there. That's probably the best medium.
Nice one. And when's the next ladies at UX that anyone might want to join?
Yeah, we don't have the date set yet, but it'll be coming at the end of the summer, all being well.
Awesome. Well, well done. And I'm pleased it's working so well, especially through lockdown, because I know how hard that is personally. Thank you for joining me this week. It's been wonderful to have a chat. And we'll get all the details in the show notes for anyone that's curious about all the other details. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Simon. Thanks for having me on board. I really enjoyed it.
Pleasure. Massive thanks to MT for joining me in this week's episode. I could honestly have gone on for twice as long to dive into more, but I hope you all learned a few things about how to arrange a specialist meetup and ensure you give yourself the right support in place to make it enjoyable. You can follow the Ladies That UX Belfast group on Twitter, and obviously MT as @BusyMummy, that's with one M in the middle. All the details will be in the show notes as well. As for the podcast, we obviously love to hear your thoughts. Get in touch on all the socials: Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as @MakeLifeWorkPod. You can always email hello@MakeLifeWorkPodcast.com, and you can obviously visit the website MakeLifeWorkPodcast.com for all the show notes and archives, and remember to rate and review us in your favourite podcast app. I'll be back next time with someone else to talk about balancing their side projects on the Make Life Work podcast.